Welcome to Evidence to Excellence, news in neuroplasticity and rehab powered by the Recovery Project. We want to personally welcome and thank you for joining us today. We're glad that you're here because this podcast is designed to keep you updated on what's new in research and evidence in the neurorehabilitation world. Now, here's your host, Polly Swingle, CEO and co-owner of the Recovery Project.
Welcome, everybody, to the next episode of Evidence to Excellence. My name is Polly Swingle, and I am going to be your host today. So today, we are going to talk about sleep. And I know from a personal, there's times I struggle with sleep. And I know that the days that I do not have a good night's sleep, boy, that day, I'm not very productive. I'm distracted. I even don't feel well. I ache more. So sleep is such an important topic. And what we're seeing in science is that there is so much more evidence as well as people that are looking into sleep, because we are finding that it is such a crucial component of health. So before we talk to our guest here that I'm going to introduce to you in just a minute, I want to go over a little bit of statistics that I was reading in regarding to sleep and how it's affecting us as humans on this earth, as well as how it's affecting us from a medical standpoint. So here's a couple statistics. The National Academy of Science Institute of Medicine reports that between 50 and 70 million Americans struggle with chronic sleep problems. According to the U.S. State Surgeon General, sleep deprivation and disorders cost the nation $15 billion, that's a B, everybody, dollars in healthcare expenses. A lack of sleep takes a toll both on physically as well as psychologically on humans out there. From daytime sleepiness to a weakened immune system if you do not get enough sleep. So sleep plays a vital role in good health, well-being throughout your life. The way you feel, as I just said, when you're awake depends on how you slept that night. Getting inadequate sleep over time can raise your risk for chronic long-term health problems. And this is something that we're really discovering through medicine, that people that do not have a good sleep cycle, which is what we're going to get into, we are starting to see that they are developing some of these secondary medical issues, comorbidities that we're seeing because of poor sleep. So when you do not have good sleep, it can affect how you think, how you react, how you work, how you learn, even how you get along with others. What we have found through science is that people who do not sleep enough or wake up often during the night, and we're going to kind of talk about what the definition of good sleep is and what some of the problems that we're seeing in our communities, is that these people that don't sleep well have a higher risk of coronary heart disease, high blood pressure, obesity, and stroke. So you guys that have been listening to our podcasts for maybe just a few episodes or for years know that one of the things that we consistently talk about is evidence, and that we talk about different topics that can affect the rehabilitation of individuals that may suffer from an accident, that may be diagnosed with a progressive disease, or that may have an incident of a stroke. So today we're going to dive into this topic of sleep. And this topic of sleep does affect people's ability to have recovery, to have a positive influence of their neuroplasticity, what we talk about all the time, to also even slow down the progression of a disease if somebody is diagnosed with MS, Parkinson's. So this is a topic that I think everybody will benefit from. So let's take this deep dive, guys, into sleep. So today I have with me a very good friend of mine as well. I have Joe Curry. And I'm going to let Joe share with you his extensive experience, his wealth of information, not just on the topic of sleep, but on fitness, nutrition, and many other things. So Joe, thank you for joining me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Honor. So Joe, let's get started. Tell the audience a little bit about your background. Let's start with that.
this one's going to age me a little bit, but I've been in the health, fitness, wellness promotion field for over 35 years. I've worked in club settings. I've had my own business for a long time where I did private training, private coaching, fitness-wise, nutrition-wise. Now I work in a corporate environment. I work for a large corporation. And so I've seen all the trends over the years. I've been in all the different environments. So I've seen a lot of things come and go and a lot of effective approaches toward health promotion, ineffective, and everything in between.
That's for sure. I mean, all those fads and those trends that you've seen through all of those years, I agree with you.
Stick around long enough, you'll see them all come back around, too.
Yeah, isn't that true? Isn't that true? So, you and I have talked just when we are, you know, in different environments, we always talk about what is effective for our health, because Joe and I are about the same age, everybody. So I want to know, what interests you in sleep? How did you kind of wrap your head around this would be a really great topic to dive into and explore with your employees?
Well, from a background standpoint, I did my undergrad and graduate work in the sciences, exercise physiology, biomechanics, nutritional science. And early on, I thought those were the things you needed to know to be healthy. I mean, if you're eating well and you're exercising regularly, then you're on your path to health. And I was working with people and you know, incorporating that philosophy for myself as well as, you know, the people I was working with. And they made some sort of progress, but it wasn't really what I expected, the level of progress and improvement. And so I started to think, well, there's something missing here. There's something I'm not doing right. What is it? So digging into it, and I started to take a step back and look at, there's a bigger picture of deep health here, and what are the other components of it? Because they were doing a lot of the right things, and their return on investment wasn't quite what it should have been. So as I dug into it, I realized the importance of understanding behavioral change, stress management, recovery, and the biggest factor in all of that was sleep. So yeah. I started studying it more. I realized this is a really powerful thing, and it's not being addressed. So I started studying it more. I took courses, and eventually went through this extensive course. To get certified and to become a sleep, stress management, and recovery coach.
I love that. And again, I mean, I think you're hearing it. You know, you hear it on the news. I mean, in all the medical journals, every single medical journal you pick up, there's typically something that is related to sleep.
Yeah.
So in your corporate job, I know that you work for a very large corporation. Mm-hmm. I understand your interest in sleep. So you developed a challenge for your employees.
Yes.
So tell us about this challenge. Also a little bit, maybe a little background, you know, how many employees, that kind of thing, maybe the age group demographics that you're dealing with, and we can share that with the audience.
Okay. Well, so we didn't start out with the intention of having a sleep challenge. I was working with this great group of people that do leadership coaching within the corporation. So they go through all the different business areas, and they do leadership coaching and all this in this type of thing. And they asked me to partner up with them, and we put together a stress management class. And I presented this stress management seminar a number of times, like four or five times. And we would get to the Q&A. It was like a 35-minute presentation. And then we had a Q&A section at the end. And all the questions were about sleep.
Really?
So even though it was about stress management, we talked about stress management techniques in the moment. We talked about stress management techniques outside of the moment, things you can do to better prepare yourself. And everybody wanted to know about sleep. So something came to me. So yeah. Then I partnered up with the people in our wellness department and the great group that I work with there. And we said, hey, there's something here. Cause this is a common thing. Every time we do this thing, this presentation, people want to talk about sleep. And we put together, and said, hey, let's put together a sleep challenge. And I think we're going to have great interest in it. It's something that seems to, like you said in your intro, it crosses all demographics. I mean,
100%.
You can, it's not hard finding people that struggle with sleep. So we had put together a sleep challenge. We had well over 800 people sign up for it.
Wow. And then what's the demographic? Are they, you know, are they in their, typically in their 50s, all the way down to their 20s? I don't know.
You name it. We had everybody. We had people from all different business areas. We had technology people. We had HR people. We had operations people. We had leaders. I mean, you name it. They were involved. So what, and to our point, it crosses, I mean, it covers everybody. We did, we provided daily information. So it was a 2-week challenge.
Okay, perfect.
And it was available to anybody company-wide. Here's an opportunity. If you want to sign up and be part of this, great. You know, it's totally voluntary. Every day they would get a little lesson, just a short lesson. Sometimes it was about sleep hygiene, best practices, the effects of sleep, how to manage your next day if you had a poor night of sleep, how to get back on track, just something like that, different tidbits of information, you know, small thing. Really encouraged. It was interactive, so we really encouraged, you know, provide comments, you know, share your thoughts, share your feelings. And they provided some great feedback and some great valuable information. And
so in looking that, so you get all this information back. Now, did you, as you're analyzing, you and your team are analyzing this data, did you just start to see patterns, tendencies? Like, what did you start to discover as a result of what they were? I guess I would be interested in originally when you evaluate these employees, what did you find? And then also, as you went through that 2 weeks, was there change?
Well, the big thing for me is I wanted them to discover what was happening with them. It was really important for me so we did some tracking. We did 5 days of tracking, and we were tracking things like what time did you go to bed, what time did you get up, how did you feel the next day, was caffeine, what time of day did you last use caffeine, did you drink alcohol, all these different factors, how did you feel like your performance was the next day. I wanted them to, you know, collect data and make connections between a certain daily behavior, certain daily choices, how it affected their sleep, and how it, you know, how it carried into the next day, so that when they got to, this was 5 days worth of tracking within these 2 weeks, they'd get to the end of 5 days, and then they would, then they had a list of best practices, and they were encouraged, okay, based on what you learned about yourself, you know, what became apparent, pick something off that list that you think would be the best next step for you.
Nice.
So instead of me assigning them some random thing that may not be applicable, they discovered something about themselves, and you would see that a lot in the feedback. Well, I didn't realize if I drank caffeine or drank coffee at 3 p.m, how it affected me the next day until I became aware of it, that type of thing. So they would pick a best practice and work on the change.
So analyzing, looking at all this feedback, can you share with our audience first, give us some examples of best practice for sleep. So the audience may be, like you said, they can evaluate themselves. I mean, this is something, guys, that you can do on your own.
Yeah.
Take 5 days, evaluate how you're feeling, how many hours you slept that night, and then these things that Joe's going to tell us, maybe you can take one of those best practices.
Right. Well, what I found with this group of people is many of them sleep reactively. That they don't put a priority on their sleep. It's something that they do when everything else is done.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I went to work. I came home. I watched TV. I fed my family or whatever their daily responsibilities are. Once I get all that checked off, then I'm going to go to bed. So it could lead to, you know, erratic bedtimes.
Absolutely.
And all that type of thing. And I also discovered that they're sometimes not really aware of the connection between things that they do throughout the day, how it affects that night of sleep, and then just the ripple effect into the next day and into the next day. Having them do some tracking and then as well as, you know, the educational aspect of it, they started, you know, put some pieces together.
Wow.
and realize that time.
I can see in my own practice of what you're saying. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if that answered that question.
No, you absolutely did. I mean, I would be curious, did you get kind of like, did you see through your data maybe what were the you know, top three, four, or five most popular? Like, was it?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, to me, was it not drinking coffee at 8 o'clock at night? I mean, what were some of those most popular best practices kind of chosen within your subject?
Well, in the feedback, I went back to the feedback and I looked it over and over, and inconsistent bedtime was a huge factor. And that kind of plays into what I was saying, you know.
Reactive sleep.
Yeah, reactive. Oh, yeah, I got everything else done. Okay, now it's time to go to bed. It might be 10:30 one night. It might be 12 o'clock the next. It might be 10 o'clock. And it's there all over the place. So that was a huge one. Screen time, as you can imagine. People with their phones. And you know, a lot of these people work in technology. So they have trouble putting that phone away. Or people in general, they really have a connection to electronic devices. And people, you know, sleeping with, the, you know, going to bed with the television on, all this electronic stimulation in their brain.
Yeah, I mean, I know that even they have, people don't put like that, I always put my do not disturb on.
Right.
So you're getting texts or alerts or messages, and sometimes it's a ding or a sound, and I'm like, how can you even stay asleep with something like that? Yeah. I agree with you. I think this technology really does affect our sleep.
And a number of people in the comments would say, I sleep with my phone right next to my bed or right next to my pillow, and it showed up in the comments with a crazy amount of frequency. A lot of people talked about caffeine.
Okay.
These are people, high performance people. They're buzzing. They're cruising along. They're using that caffeine to stay alert, to stay on top of things. It gets them through the day, and it's effective then. But what's the effect later in the night? And that became a problem. And alcohol was also another thing. And people,
So alcohol. I mean, I know I just read an article that sometimes people will be like, well, I have a glass of wine or two glasses of wine to help me fall asleep.
Yes.
But then what happens is that you then have difficulty staying asleep.
Yep.
And it affects your sleep cycle.
Right. It does. Yes. And it also, your body goes through these different cycles and throughout different parts of the night. So it disrupts that, and you don't get the quality of sleep in the later parts. Alcohol disrupts your ability to get into that quality, restorative, regenerative sleep in the later part of the evening and through the later part of your sleep cycle. So.
I am curious, and you haven't mentioned this, exercise. So I would think exercise is beneficial to help you sleep, because then you're going to physically kind of tire yourself out, right? Helps with your body and your mind.
Right. It's a huge
part. Does it make a difference? And people always ask me this, when you exercise.
It could.
Okay.
But the people are so individual.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, if you look at purely look at the data, you could say, if I exercise late, my body's all keyed up, it's hard for me to wind back down and shift into that, that cycle down point where I can go to sleep. But I know people that they're very committed to their exercise, and sometimes doing it later in the day is their only opportunity, and they do it, and they do okay. Ideally, better. It might be better to go earlier in the day, but it's important to them, and they've figured out a way to make it work. So, in general, earlier in the day might be better, but everybody, there's some individuals that just can just power right through it and do their thing.
So, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the. We kind of really dove into the barriers of sleep, but some of the best practices of the sleep hygiene. So a little bit about bedtime routine. So are you saying, Sunday through Thursday, if you work a Monday through Friday schedule, that really is that like setting, I'm going to get in my bed at X time. What other sleep hygiene is important? You talked about shutting those electronics off, shutting off, the TV. But what are some other things that people have done that help kind of get you in that mode to fall asleep?
Well, the bedtime routine, like you said, Sunday through Thursday, and that's how most people do it.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, because that's 5 out of 7. That's pretty good.
Okay, good. I'll take it.
But the best routine, and it's really difficult because people's weekends are often different than their weekend.
Absolutely.
But if the great situation would be that you plug this in 7 days a week. Is that realistic? Maybe not, unless you're my wife and she's like a robot with her sleep.
Like a robot, yeah, exactly.
I don't even need clocks in my house because I can just look at my wife and I'm like, oh, must be bedtime. It must be time to get up because like she without clocks, without alarms, she just.
So how long does it take? I mean, a regular, should you assume that, all right, go into bed, lay down, boom, that's it?
No. And that's the thing about it. So sleep it's such a powerful tool, and it's, your body loves routine, but your brain doesn't like change. Hmm. So changing that, like you're asking, it's not easy. And sometimes there's a latent benefit. Like if you're a night owl and you tend to go to sleep late or with an irregular pattern, and you start to plug it in, it'll say, okay, I'm going to start going to bed at 10 o'clock every night. I'm going to start my pre-bed routine at 9:15. I'm going to shut off all electronics. I'm going to go through my, maybe read from a paper book, getting away from electronics, read a paper book, start this wind down process. And there's an adaptation process. And sometimes your brain and your body will rebel. So you got to keep working at it and keep trying it could be a struggle, but then your body gets into that rhythm, get into your circadian rhythms, and eventually it will adapt. But it can be a grind for a while.
Do those devices work? Because I have one that I put on a sound of the ocean.
Oh, the white, yeah.
White noise.
White noise,
that
yeah.
is effective.
For some people, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's in my list. So that's the thing. It's very individualized.
Yeah.
Some things work. Everything works for some people, and I mean, there are some basic sleep hygiene practices that tend to work for most people.
Which are?
I got a list of 10, and this, now keep in mind, this is not an exhaustive list. I
mean, right.
People have to find what works for them. In no particular order, establishing a regular schedule. That's a big one. If you can work toward a consistent sleep time and a consistent wake time, your body will adapt, and that's how, before we had technology and artificial lighting, and that's how people lived. The sun came up, you got up, you got busy, you did what you had
so
to do.
That's so
okay, starting to get dark, I can't really see what I'm doing, so I think it's probably time to go to bed. And that's how our bodies operate. So if you can get into a rhythm like that, that's really effective.
7 days a week, everybody, not five.
I realize I'm very aware of the difference between realistic and idealistic.
Exactly.
Following a bedtime routine. Start that wind down process. Let your brain start to calm, start to transition into that more restful state, so the transition into sleep is not so abrupt. Disconnecting from electronics is huge. Let your brain take that stimulation away from your brain, because it's the light for one thing. And then people say, well, I use my I take the blue light away so I can. It's still stimulating your brain, and sometimes the content of what people are looking at and reading or taking in is also get your brain keyed up and everything. So if you're reading bad news or if you're reading stuff that, there's an excitation process and you get you all wound up, and then you think you're going to set your phone down or your device down and then put your head on the pillow and everything's going to turn off, it doesn't really work that way.
Well, I think, too, for the people that are listening that have children in those video games,
yeah.
Really set those boundaries that at this time we're done with the video games, and probably way more than the recommended 30 to 60 minutes,
but
so that they can start resting their brain basically.
Yeah. I say 30 because that's somewhat realistic for people, but I've scaled back to as short as 20. I'm just trying to move them forward.
Yeah.
If I can start them at 20, then maybe 25, then 30, and slowly work toward 45 or something, that's great. But I have to find something that works for them. A wake-up routine, start your day with some healthy habits. Get out of bed right away. Try not to use a snooze. Get some hydration. Get some movement and some sunshine, that type of thing. Get your body, get that whole thing rolling. Some consistent exercise. Get some aerobic exercise, some strength training, some flexibility, stretching, that type of thing. That helps your body establish rhythms and process things so that you can get into a good pattern. Caffeine, using caffeine wisely. This one, I got a lot of pushback on this one in our challenge. There's recommendation of not having any caffeine eight to 9 hours before bedtime. So for a lot of people, that's like noon, 1 o'clock, maybe 2 o'clock would be their last type ingestion of caffeine. And the one that really I got some pushback.
I just saw this. Tell everybody. This is blowing my mind.
Delaying the intake for 90 minutes. When you get up and then delay caffeine intake for 90 minutes. So what the intention there is, so when you wake up and people, countless people, I really look forward to that first cup of coffee. Don't talk to me until I've had my coffee. That type of thing, because that's what they're using. That's their thing to kickstart the day. By delaying it, the theory is that you can, over time, allow your body to use its natural processes to elevate your cortisol, use the bright light to wake things up, and get that process started in a natural way. And then the caffeine delay of like 90 minutes can help eliminate that mid-afternoon slump, because it changes the pattern. So a lot of people say 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I get this real slump, and then they tend to reach toward caffeine or sugar-type food and that type of thing. But so this battle, and I got a lot of pushback on it, in a joking way. People are like,
absolutely.
Yeah, you're asking a lot there. And I understand. I get it. It's hard. And they could do it, on a continuum. Maybe delay it 30 minutes, then work toward 45, and then work, but I'll allow that process to take place and see if you can get the natural pattern happening and your body can wake itself up. Like I said, using light, using activity, that type of thing, some regular hydration, and see if you could. And it's a battle at first.
Our media doesn't help. I mean, think about it. Look at the commercials for coughing it for breakfast. Everything is like, get right up. You're in your robe and you're in your slippers. You're going for the coffee.
Right. And if you go to a restaurant or something, the first thing, can I get you some coffee?
Exactly.
Before you even settled in, they're bringing coffee.
Yeah.
So another one is being mindful about alcohol consumption. Like we said, it can help you fall asleep faster, but it lowers the sleep quality in the second half of the night by suppressing your REM sleep, your rapid eye movement sleep. And it results in shorter sleep duration and more disruptions, that type of thing. So if you can eliminate alcohol consumption 3 or more hours before you're going to go to bed, that it reduces the chance of hindering your sleep. Doing a brain dump, which is great. A lot of people that like have real active mind, full of ideas, and then they overthink things and they overworry. I tend to do that, so I'm very aware of that. Take a few minutes to write down what's on your mind, put it on paper, can calm your mind and enhance your sleep, and it kind of separates you from the thoughts. And it's like, okay, I've put these down. I'm going to deal with these tomorrow, but this is going to give me a chance to
I love that idea.
Disconnect from a while.
I love that idea.
A little journaling or something like that. And just could be a little bit. It doesn't have to be a lot, but it's a great way, because just the process of writing it down, things tend to sort themselves out in your head, and what you might have been worrying about may not be quite as drastic. You can put it down on paper. Okay, this is something we're going to deal with. Lowering the room temperature. I started doing this a few years ago, and it's had a huge effect for me. So sometimes people use a cooling unit on their bed, or they lower their home temperature 68, 67 degrees or less. That tends to, my sleep has improved as a result of that. You can open a fan, crank up the AC, you could open up a window, use a fan, crank up the AC, something like that. Try to cool the room. A dark environment is really big, because you're highly sensitive to light. So if you got, if you don't have curtains that block the light real well, or if you got lights in your room from electronic devices or clocks or something like that, if you can somehow darken your room. Some people wear a sleep mask. I do that sometimes, pretty much every night now, and it looks weird, but it's really helpful.
That.
That's an additional tips, like you said, white noise. Taking a warm bath helps people calm down. Some light stretching before you go to bed, just to try to get your body and your mind into a calmer state, and
so
things like that.
That is also awesome. There are personally two things that just those 10 suggestions, two of them, I am going to try and initiate. The coffee thing, I am going to try that, because I am that person. I get up and I shuffle my little body right to the coffee maker, and that's the first thing I do. Yeah. But I also I am that person that I can fall asleep, but I can't stay asleep because my mind doesn't shut off.
Yeah.
So I love that idea of writing what I'm thinking about down before I go to sleep. I'm curious if that's going to help me. So I think those suggestions are great.
Yeah, sometimes you just have to try things. Give them a fair shot.
Exactly.
Try it for a while and then evaluate.
Exactly.
Okay, hey,
exactly.
Did that work? Was it effective? Do I think? And then, and if it wasn't, try something else. If it was, try to continue it. And sometimes you'll fall off the wagon. You'll have a good pattern going for a while, and then you'll get off. Then just do your best to get back on track. And
exactly.
Just try to have more victories than defeats. Then just look at it that way.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the science, like physiologically, what happens to the body if you have a poor sleep cycle, if you have a poor, sleep hygiene. Can you share with the audience I have done so much reading on, glucose intolerance, your immune system, but can you share with the audience a little bit about what some of the science is saying about when we don't have a good sleep pattern, these potentially could be the health risks?
Yeah. Well, we feel the short-term ones, I don't feel good, I'm grumpy, and my energy level, I got a little brain fog. I feel like I'm recovering quite as well. I might, little aches and pains, that type of thing. That's the short term stuff. And there's a lot of long term. If the sleep is so important, it affects every physiological process in our body, and everything that happens is in some way influenced or connected to sleep. And I think it's one of the most underappreciated factors of health. Because people will, they'll put effort in their nutrition, they'll put effort into their exercise and that type of thing, and their supplements and all that type of thing, but they don't appreciate the value of sleep. And it's one of the most readily available things you can do, or factor that you can work on, to whether you're an athlete trying to improve performance, whether you're in a rehabilitation setting trying to recover from something, or whether you're trying to perform better in your occupation, whether you're trying to lose weight. I mean, it comes into play in all that stuff. And if you're not getting good sleep, it's part of everything. Hormone regulation, tissue repair, decision making, all this stuff. And if you're not getting good sleep, and it's one of those things that tends to slip away slowly, so it kind of creeps up on you. You may not notice it until something happens. You're like, wow, that's unlike how I usually would have handled that, or that's unlike how I usually would have been able to deal with that, or that type of thing.
But then it's kind of like, then it turns into a behavior.
Yes.
Right? So then it turns into a behavior where you start to recognize, gosh, I didn't even start to go to sleep till 12:30.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, 12:30 is the time you're starting to try to fall asleep, but you still got to get up at 6 a.m. Right. Or you leave your phone next to you. But now this becomes this behavior.
Yeah.
And as we know, that is the biggest challenge.
Always.
Is then how do we change that behavior? Yeah. Because then that becomes normal
in our
lifestyle.
Yeah.
You sent me yesterday just this gentleman talking on Instagram about sleep. And one of the things that I loved is that he said, sleep, we can change sleep. It's the lowest hanging fruit.
It is the,
he's so right, because everything that you and I have talked about today is something that anybody can start with.
Right.
And really, it is that lowest hanging fruit, that why not go ahead and set a bedtime, decrease caffeine, go ahead and darken the room. All those things that we suggested, because there is so much evidence and science out there of how that does directly affect your health. And one of the things that, I'm always talking about in this podcast is neuroplasticity, because we talk so much about the central nervous system and about, injuries and these diagnoses in the individuals that we see that just don't come through the recovery project, that we have so many therapists that listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
And there is a direct relationship with neuroplasticity, that recovery of the central nervous system, and sleep.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, every patient I think I've ever seen, which again, I've been doing this for 35 years, when they definitely first either get hurt, diagnosed with their disease, have their incident, they have issues with sleep.
For sure.
And think about it. When you first are injured, or if you have to be in the hospital is not a place, especially if you're in there for a week, 2 weeks. Some of these individuals that we see are in there for much longer than that. Just think what that does to their sleep cycle and what that does with their potential for recovery.
At the time when it's most critical.
Exactly. No, 100%. And
you got people coming out of your room all the time.
Lights are on.
I need to test this. I need to test. Yeah.
Noise.
So when you need it the most, you're getting it the least. So that sets the stage for a really bad process.
100%. 100%. So I think just these recommendations that you made are just so crucial for the patients that listen to this and the people that we treat, but also for the therapists. We have so many people that are in healthcare that listen to this podcast. Yeah. And to ask that question, you know, I'm a physical therapist, but to ask that question, how are you sleeping?
Yeah.
What is your routine?
Yeah.
Because that's something that we can just talk about with them and say, hey, this time, let's try to shut off the TV and put your electronics in the other room, like you said, 30 minutes before you go to bed.
It's important for the therapist as well because, I mean, those are the type of people that care. They spend a lot of time thinking about how they can help people and care about people. And if they're not doing their self-care because they're so invested in the people, then over the period of time, it affects their ability to do their job optimally and help people.
100%.
And they often don't make – I'm sorry to interrupt
you. No, go.
They often – don't make the connection, like what's happening on a daily basis, and is that connected to my sleep? Like emotional responses, like exhaustion, irritability, mood fluctuations, mood problems. They don't handle stress well. Frustration, anger, and all that type of thing. And on a mental level, they're not. You know, like I said, the brain fog, and their productivity is decreased, and their working capacity and concentration, all that gets thing. And then they start to physically suffer, like we talked about. Little ailments you feel, I'm not recovering quite as well. I got these aches and pains. Long-term, like you said, cardiovascular disease, cancer risk, metabolic problems, diabetes, immune function, it's all connected.
It is all connected. You know, one of the trends that in the world of rehab that we're seeing, and it's in all of our journals and these conferences that we go to, it's always like how to prevent burnout.
Yeah.
So everything you just listed is those characteristics that we're seeing in an employee that is getting burnt out.
Yep.
And you're absolutely right. Assess your sleep, because if you're not getting good sleep, all of that irritability, productivity, be able to think sharply and physically feel all right is all affected.
Right.
Yeah. So
you can't plug in another supplement. You can't plug in a different exercise routine or a different type of food. Nothing's going to replace what that sleep is going to do for you.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's so simple.
There's no hack.
What would you – and I know this is a loaded question because I have a feeling I know what you're going to say. But –
that means we think alike.
Give the audience the top – your opinion, guys. This is Joe's opinion. Your top three suggestions to start the process of improving their sleep. What would you suggest?
First thing I would say is go into it realizing that often the solutions are your basic fundamental behaviors. They're simple – but not easy, because like you talked about,
you
break up, you get into routines, and you even know when you're doing it, this is not the greatest thing for what I'm trying to do, but you're in, it's a habitual behavior and that type of thing. So go into it knowing some of these solutions are simple, they're not easy, but you have to, and you have to understand there might be a delayed payoff. And it's real hard when you're trying to establish a bedtime routine and you're used to getting to bed late. Sometimes I'll have people reverse engineer it. It's like, pick a wake-up time. And no matter what happens the night before, make sure you get up at that time. And sometimes it's rough. I mean, because if you go to bed late and you say, no matter what, I'm going to get up at 6 o'clock or I'm going to get up at 6:30, and you went to bed at 12:30, 1 o'clock, I mean, that's a tough one.
That's tough.
But it won't take long if you keep forcing that wake-up time where your body starts saying, whoa, I need to go to bed earlier because I just don't have it in me to stay up till, push myself 5 hours of sleep or that type of thing. So knowing that it might be hard, but you got to stay with it. establishing a routine, I think, is one of the first ones. And trying to stick with it as much as you possibly can. We joked around about the Sunday through Thursday versus Friday, Saturday. Do the best you can. I mean, if you're all over the map on a seven-day week and you get 4 days of consistency, that's a great start. And then build into five, and then build in when you can. It's not all or nothing. It doesn't have to be perfect every time. Just the effort of working in that direction and learning about what do I need to do to get on this pattern? What things do I need to do to take care of the night before? What things should I do in the morning? And you learn about yourself, and you're going to have bumps in the road. You're going to have failures, and then you learn from them. You gather data, and then you do better with it.
I love that.
Establishing the routine. The screen thing is a big one, just because that comes up not just in this challenge I did in the corporate setting, but other people I've worked with, establishing a time. Okay, and it's hard. People will set an alarm. I have an alarm on my phone at 9:15. That alarm goes off, p.m. Okay, and at that point, and I see it coming, like it's 9:10, it's 9:11. I'm like, oh, crap, I only got 4 more minutes left. When it comes, I'm shutting it down. And it's hard because, like, oh, I got one more email to answer. I got one more thing I got to look up. But turn it off.
I love that.
And it's a battle. I mean, there's a battle that goes on in your head. It can be real tough. Disconnect from it.
I love that.
Put it in a different room or something like that. Because and I've asked myself, when I get up in the morning, did I really miss anything? And rarely, if ever, did I say, wow, that was really important that I got that text at 11 o'clock at night.
You don't miss anything.
You don't. No, it's nothing, because we survived centuries without
the
urgency of that notification.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And be wise about how your daily behaviors, how your exercise feels, and how did I sleep well when I exercised at this time of day or this time of day, and watch that caffeine. And anything that I listed, if it rang a bell with you, if it felt like it could be a valuable thing to you, focus on the ones that you think would be the most effective for you. But those are the ones that come up most consistently with people I work with.
I love that. I have learned so much. I am going to change some of my behaviors from this talk. I want to thank you, Joe. He is such a wealth of information on this topic and so many others. I'm going to have to pull you in so we can talk about some other things.
Yeah, I love that.
As well. Anything else before we close this out that you want to share with our audience?
I'm big on studying behavioral change. People love to make wholesale changes. There's four things there that I can change. Pick one. If you pick four, your likelihood of it not being effective is really high.
Yeah.
Even two knocks it off a little bit. Pick one. Pick the one that you think could be the most effective. It's going to challenge your, take you out of your comfort zone a little bit. But you say, yeah, I could do that. I can do it. It's going to be a challenge, but I can do it. And work on that one. Nail that one. Take a couple weeks, get it down, and then work on the next one. Make that one a habit, and then add the next one.
I love that.
Because when you focus on one, you have a high level of success, likely. When you start adding two, three, and four, it's too much.
It's too much,
and you see
yeah.
that all the time. People are like, well, we see it a lot in people the first of the year when they get their New Year's resolutions.
Yeah,
and they try to completely change their lifestyle, and it lasts a couple of weeks, and then it's really difficult.
Yeah.
So I would say, pick one, bite off less than you can chew. That way I know you can digest it.
I love it. Ah, that's perfect. Well, thank you so much. And guys, thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Always you can get information from our social channels, The Recovery Project on Facebook, as well as Instagram, as well as on YouTube. And then, of course, our website, www.therecoveryproject.net. And we'll see you all next time.
Thank you for listening to today's Evidence to Excellence News in Neuroplasticity and Rehab podcast. We appreciate you and hope that you come back every fourth Tuesday of the month to get more of what's new in evidence and research in the neurorehabilitation world. To learn more about the Recovery Project or to find out what we're up to next, you can visit us anytime at therecoveryproject.net.